I'm Kim Masters, host of KCRW's The Business. Thanks for listening to our monthly podcast. Now here's the host, Michael Schneider of TV Guide magazine.
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Schneider, and this is The Spinoff. Joining me on the podcast, as always, is Mr. Joe Adalian of Vulture.com. Joe is coming to us once again from KUNV in Las Vegas. Hello, Joe.
Shalom, Mike.
Shalom. And our guest panelist this month is Maggie Furlong of Yahoo TV. And welcome, Maggie.
Thanks for
to
having
the podcast.
Me.
Absolutely. So here in LA, it is back to school week. I just dropped the kiddies off today. Can't say I'm that sad, but it is a sign that we're moving toward the tail end of summer. A couple of months ago, we talked about some of the original summer programming in the works. And today we'll check back and see what worked and what didn't. And spoiler alert, most did not work. But that's typical. Speaking of spotty summers, reality TV is in the middle of another one. Are the networks at least being rewarded for some of the risky shows that they're now doing? Or looking at the hot trend of the moment, are they all naked? So we'll talk about the latest in reality TV. Joe, of course, always has a lot to say about that. And here's what else I know about the summer. Probably the people having the best summer so far is the cast of The Big Bang Theory. Things were tense for a moment as negotiations were underway and production was even halted briefly, but things are okay. Nerds, you can rest easily. Big Bang Theory is coming back, so we'll talk a little bit about that dispute, what was causing the dispute, and eventually how they found resolution. And speaking of Big Bang, the show has all the ratings, but not necessarily the Emmy glory. So we'll go around the room. This is our final episode before the Emmys, and we'll sort of prognosticate one last time on who may be the big winners going home on August 25th. And Joe, once again, will tell us why he hates the Emmys. So we'll get to that later in the show. And of course, we'll wrap things up by going around the room and downloading what we're thinking about this month. So guys, remember June? Remember June? That felt like it was probably decades ago at this point, having gone through TCA, the Television Critics Association press tour, and then Comic-Con. That feels like eons ago. But back then, in those halcyon days, we talked about some of the new original programming coming down the pike. And that was a change from ages past, where back in the day, summer was all about reruns. There wasn't a lot of original content. Cable changed all that. And of course, this year, the broadcast networks came to play as well. So 2 months later, we're a little more jaded than we were before. We now kind of see what worked and what didn't do. So let's kind of take a look back at how they're doing. Maggie, start off with you. Was there anything this summer that caught your fancy? Are you hooked on any new shows this summer?
That's the sad thing. I'm really not, and I wanted to be. You know, I got excited about The Leftovers coming to HBO. It didn't feel like a summer show at all whatsoever, but I'd read the book and obviously loved the people involved. And after one episode, I just wanted to blow my brains out. And I cannot, it's not a summer show. I just can't get on board.
Don't do that.
I know.
But
I know.
What was it about the show that just turned you off?
It's the most depressing television show I think I've ever seen. I mean, there's just no levity. There's no silver lining. There's nothing there to make me. I understand the study and grief and loss. And nope, I'm done.
So did you not watch any more episodes?
I tried several times.
Because I feel like, there's, I don't know if you call it slow TV, because that's kind of a different movement that's happening, I think, in the Scandinavian countries. But there is this movement toward, you know, the slow sort of, you know, peeling back the onion, 10-episode, 13-episode series. And Leftovers is one of them, where I think it took around episode 8 for me to really kind of get into the groove of, okay, I see this is now where Tom Perata and Damon Lindelof are going. Joe, what about you? I mean, did you watch The Leftovers? Have you been into Extant? What are you sort of digging on this summer besides, obviously, Big Brother 29 or whatever they're on now?
That would be 16, Mike. And okay. I, unfortunately, Maggie, I'm going to depart company with you and join with Mike. I love The Leftovers, but I understand that it's absolutely not a summer show and it's not for everybody. And while it's doing actually okay for HBO, it's doing fine. It's doing about the same, maybe a little bit better, relatively speaking, than The Newsroom did last year, given the fact that True Blood, its lead, and is way down. You know, it's not as if The Leftovers is taking the nation by storm. It wasn't designed to be. It wasn't designed to be the next Game of Thrones or the next True Blood. Or if it was, HBO has failed in that mission.
Well, in some ways, though, doesn't it kind of remind you of the rollout of True Detective? I mean, the only difference is True Detective had these two characters, these two actors at the heart of it that were chewing up every scene. That's different from here. But as you watch The Leftovers, slowly, it stays with you. And it's an interesting show in that, you know, I wasn't so sure I was on board after episode 1, but then I couldn't stop thinking about it.
I think The Leftovers is great, and I was on board by episode 3. But the larger point of summer TV is that I don't think this summer has yielded any major blockbusters. There are shows that have broken out. Weirdly enough, TNT's The Last Ship is actually doing really big numbers.
I'm shocked by it. I am.
Well, it seems, but then, Michael Bay does Transformers and people go to it. So we can't just sit here as critics. And I think TNT found a crowd pleaser with The Last Ship. It'll almost certainly be back. I think The Strain on FX has not been a massive hit, but it's relative to everything else, it's doing fine.
Yeah.
And we have yet to see one more show that's a big show this summer to premiere. It premieres this right around the time this podcast will drop, which is Legends, also on TNT with Don't Kill Sean Bean. Mm-hmm. So, it's not all is lost this summer, but clearly this whole idea of summer being the time where cable in particular can roll out lots of hits and lots of breakthroughs, no, it hasn't happened.
But well, I do see shows that are kind of picking up a little bit of steam. FX has You're the Worst, which week after week is kind of getting more and more buzz, whereas before they premiered, Married seemed like the big bet with Nat Faxon and Judy Greer, and it seemed like that would be the show people would like. And I'm actually really liking You're the Worst and was surprised how much I liked it.
What we're seeing this summer is sort of analogous to what we're seeing on the movie side as well. This has been a really spotty summer at the box office where you've had some big months, some big weeks, and then you've had some really poor weeks as well. And people covering the movie industry have been talking all summer about, what's going to save the summer. And then suddenly a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles comes along or, one of the Marvel movies comes along, Guardians of the Galaxy comes along. And then suddenly you have some barren weeks again. And we're seeing that on television as well. And partly that's because summer is now becoming a mature place for all these original shows. And the more you throw against the wall, the more some will stick and some won't. So summer is now looking a lot like fall, where the majority of shows are going to fail, but there are going to be a couple that sort of hang on and do quite well. And Joe, you mentioned The Last Ship, which I'm sort of not surprised did well because that is very much in the TNT wheelhouse.
When they
you think
do
about
no drama.
boom, as they now say, a TNT drama. But, that's a network that did very well with Fallen Skies a few years ago. And it's popcorn, but at the same time, there's serialized elements to it. And it's kind of the best of both worlds for that channel, for that network. And we'll see how Legends does as well.
But we also, I think this, if we're going to talk about summer anymore, we have to talk about the fact that I think what has happened is that in sort of a reversal of a decades-long trend, broadcast networks have succeeded in stealing away some of the audience back from cable. Not that broadcasters are doing blockbuster numbers by any means, but a lot of networks have replaced reruns with original programming. And while none of that original programming, the new original programming, is breaking out in a huge way, it's another thing that's eating away from cable's opportunity to get hits. And so as a result, you have USA Network's dramas just sort of doing middling numbers. Besides The Last Ship, TNT's other shows this summer have done
Rizzoli and Isles is still, that show.
It does fine, but their
somehow
newer shows.
Just keeps on chugging along.
It does, but it's down. And Murder in the First is done only okay. TBS hasn't launched any comedies. So there's been a death by a thousand cuts. And you see networks like NBC and CBS in particular very smartly just programming a bunch of lower cost. Some of it's scripted. Some of it's a reality. None of them do huge numbers, but they do it well enough that they'll be back. So you've got NBC's renewed almost every show that it's premiered this summer, setting the potentially for some gains next year. I think it's networks realizing it takes time to find an audience, that you can always do worse, that reruns absolutely don't work. Fox is stuck mostly to reruns in many time slots, and it's done horribly. And the networks, though, have also made some strategic moves. And you have Under the Dome doing far fewer views than it did last year, but still doing much better than many cable shows. Mm-hmm. 24 on Fox was not the blockbuster some expected, but when you look at the L7 numbers, which are the number of people who catch up via DVR, it's turned into a bigger hit than it was the last season was off the air. And Extant on CBS is probably a disappointment by any measure, but it still is doing better than CBS drama reruns, and there's even a chance it could come back.
Well, the thing about Extant, however you want to pronounce it.
Notice that I've avoided saying it.
Yeah, that's the show from Steven Spielberg, and Halle Berry, of course, is the star of it. And there was a lot of anticipation for this because Halle Berry does television. Mm-hmm. But, a very complicated show and perhaps they didn't do the best sales in sort of telling the public what this show really is. But the great thing about CBS is that these shows, both Extant and Under the Dome, they come to air completely paid for. Mm-hmm. CBS has done a deal with Amazon with those two shows, and that they have immediate syndication rights on Amazon. So it covers the deficit on those shows. So if you're CBS, there's no harm, no foul in doing it. And you know, they're looking really smart. And next year they have yet another show, Zoo, coming on. So mm-hmm. they keep adding one new show a year. I like that sort of model. And also NBC, really interesting what they're doing. You know, the reality stuff, you know, including American Ninja Warrior, which has suddenly turned into a mega hit for these guys in the summer, and America's Got Talent, which is a staple, that's doing well. And then the comedies, surprisingly so, perhaps, but Welcome to Sweden and Undateable are two shows that are now coming back for next year.
But there are also two shows that a lot of people didn't realize were ever even on the air. And I think that's NBC's problem. I mean, you look at Undateable and you look at Welcome to Sweden, and I don't know many people who even knew that they'd premiered, let alone had finished a first season.
Yeah, well, I mean, they tried hard with Undateable in marketing that. And Welcome to Sweden is a low-budget show, so mm-hmm. that's one that they could kind of keep going on during
but
the summer.
But to Maggie's point, I think she's absolutely right that people didn't know they were on. The ratings were okay, but not really good. And yet, NBC is bringing them back. And I think that recognizes something, which is that even the broadcast networks today cannot expect to put shows on unless they have huge, monster marketing campaigns. They can't expect to put them on and have an instant audience. So what NBC is saying is, we're going to keep it on. We're going to rerun them online throughout the next 9 months. It'll have some measure of familiarity next season. Maybe there'll be people who see, oh, that show's coming back. Maybe I'll catch up on it. It's giving it a fighting chance to find an audience. It's giving it a two-year sort of window. And I think that's much smarter than what you see at some other networks where it's six episodes on and then gone. I think you need to be patient now and give viewers the signal. We're behind this show so you can get behind it, because we all have so many options. We haven't even talked about the fact that one of the biggest networks this summer is probably Netflix. We don't know exactly how many people are watching it, but we know that Netflix is always an option for people. We also know that the 8 episodes of Brooklyn Nine-Nine that I had stored on my DVR were an option for me this summer. And for several nights this summer, that's what I was watching. And I have no doubt, even though Nielsen doesn't do a good job measuring them, that there are lots of people catching up on shows they had from cable, from broadcast. Maybe they decided this was the summer they were going to watch The Wire. You know, there are so many options that you just can't expect to get an audience right away unless you just spend a boatload of money. And since they can't really do that for most summer shows, I think it's much smarter what NBC is doing. NBC's impressed me by their patience. Now, we'll see if it works. We could be talking about those shows being even bigger flops a year from now.
That's the thing. The optimist in me wants to believe that they're giving them a chance. The pessimist in me thinks, well, they're desperate. They need to fill a lot of comedy slots next year, losing a few big ones. And hey, we already made them once. Maybe we can see if, you know, on the cheap, we can keep it going.
Better the devil you know. It's
exactly.
A little bit of column A and column B. Television is a mix of optimism and also desperation.
Yep.
So you can take that to the bank. So we're talking about summer. We can't not talk about reality in the summer. You know, one of the biggest at-bats was ABC's Rising Star. Now, you notice no one is talking about Rising Star, but that's not the only one. There are several new reality shows that came on and then disappeared this summer. Joe, as the reality kingpin, what do you make of this? I mean, is part of the problem that the networks, the broadcast networks at least, are still doing reality like they always did it?
Well, here's the thing. NBC and ABC have had radically different approaches. NBC revived a show with Last Comic Standing. It did modest numbers, but it's bringing it back. It did just fine. It's being patient. ABC sort of did a mix of things, and they actually developed a whole bunch of shows for this summer. Some of them were really out there. They have a show called The Quest that's airing right now, which is sort of like this combination of a Lord of the Rings movie and Survivor, and it's really good. They also did earlier this summer a show called Sing Your Face Off, which was incredibly silly, but it had B-level celebrities sort of making themselves up into pop stars and singing. So you had Lisa Rinna doing Madonna. And yes, it is ridiculous.
Well, but ABC also buried that show.
It was interesting.
Saturday.
And that's my point. ABC had three or four reality shows this summer that were new, the other being Bachelor in Paradise. And the two that were the most innovative, Sing Your Face Off and The Quest, got no marketing, no promotion, horrible scheduling. They were destined to fail because ABC gave up, because maybe they saw the video of these shows and said, ooh, this is too different and risky. Let's not. Instead, they saw another show called Rising Star, which was really no different than American Idol or The Voice, except with a couple gimmicks. They bet the farm on it, and no one showed up. Viewers rejected it, because I think viewers are much more interested in seeing something new as opposed to a rehash. And so what's a shame to me this summer is that networks aren't willing to commit to really taking the time to make something different work. And as long as networks refuse to do that, they're going to get punished.
I think, Joe, you make a good point about The Quest, which actually I'm kind of enjoying too. I'm watching with my son right now. And that's the kind of show that it's a little cheesy, but it's a lot of fun. But had they put the kind of marketing that they put behind Rising Star, behind The Quest, and put it on a Sunday.
I think Sunday killed Rising Star, to be quite honest. I mean, I think a lot of things probably killed Rising Star, but
Rising
the
Star
Sunday
killed
night,
itself.
The Sunday
yeah,
night for
Rising,
that.
No,
I feel like certain reality competition shows sort of require that week-to-week blogger element where people will be talking about things. And sorry, but no one is wanting to work on a Sunday night or to go to the tapings on Sunday night every single week. I do feel like it could have been fun on a Wednesday.
Well, what's interesting is that there are some new reality ideas that are actually getting some attention on the cable side. So Married at First Sight,
yes.
Which is becoming a nice little hit for the FYI network, formerly known as Bio, of all places, where, you know, a couple, you know, meets each other and immediately gets married. It's become a little buzzy show, especially for a tiny network like FYI. So what do you guys make of that? And then, of course, all the naked shows that, you know, say what you want about naked dating. It's pretty fascinating.
It's awesome.
And it's making a lot of waves, and I'm enjoying the episodes that I'm seeing because it is so off the wall. But, you know, is it time? Are we finally seeing a new sort of era of these sort of buzzy, ridiculous reality shows, the kinds that we used to enjoy watching in the early 2000s?
I hope so. I mean, I don't know how many people are actually watching Married at First Sight, but I know that so many people have come up to me to ask about it just because it's one of those shows people can't help but talk about. Can you believe this? I mean, going back to like Darva Conger and Who Wants to Marry a Millionaire on TV, it feels so insane that someone would sign up for this project, and yet this is what's happening on television right now. And I think it's kind of fun that they want to do new and interesting things to win us back with reality TV.
Yeah. And what's interesting about the most new and interesting thing they did with Married at First Sight is they didn't make it exploitive. You know, if Mike Darnell had done this show in the early 2000s, Mike, we know what it would be. We know that it would be cheesy and it would be loud and it would be filled with fake drama and all sorts of producer manipulation.
Right, right. And Mark Thompson would be doing the voiceover.
Of course. But Married with First Sight, you know, FYI ordered, this was a show that could have probably gone to any of the broadcast networks, but none of the broadcast networks wanted to commit to a whole show sight unseen because it was too chancy. But FYI, being a brand new network with absolutely nothing to lose, not only took a chance on it sight unseen, but they actually had the guts and the cojones to not sensationalize it, which is so easy to do in cable because there's been an arms race over the last 5 years of how over the top, how crazy, how weird, how virtually scripted you can get. I mean, we all know that Duck Dynasty probably should be winning Emmy Awards for writing and costume design, but it doesn't because we pretend it's reality. Whereas Married at First Sight, instead of making it a game show, instead of making it crazy, it's pretty much a documentary. And yes, it's a wild premise. And yes, I have no doubt that some of the cast members on this show are acting just a little bit. But it all seems sort of genuine. And that to me is what's been refreshing. I've sort of gotten away from watching a lot of reality, Mike, because I've been so disappointed in just how the genre has drifted away from its, you know, sort of roots as being a social experiment or actually empowering of human beings. But with The Quest and with Married at First Sight, I'm excited again that maybe this pendulum is going to swing back to being just a little bit real again.
And naked.
Well, yes.
After the break, we'll talk Big Bang Theory contracts and share some final thoughts on this year's Emmys. From KCRW.com, this is The Spinoff.
Take KCRW with you on one of our smartphone apps. Available for the iPhone, Android, and BlackBerry. You can stream KCRW live, listen to podcasts, and all our news and music streams. Learn more and download at kcrw.com/apps.
Hey, we're back. It's The Spinoff. I'm Michael Schneider, the executive editor of TV Guide magazine, along with Joe Adalian of Vulture.com and Maggie Furlong of Yahoo TV. So guys, we touched on some newer CBS shows earlier, but here's another older CBS show that's gotten a lot of attention recently, The Big Bang Theory. So Joe, you wrote about this on Vulture.com the other day. So the issue had to do with cast contract negotiations, and after stopping rehearsals for a week, they came to a resolution, and there's a lot of money involved. We're talking millions of dollars, actually $1 million per episode for the big three. So, Joe, you wrote about it on Vulture. Talk about why you feel these guys are still a little underpaid.
Well, underpaid relative to what maybe they could be worth. Obviously, compared to the rest of us, they're making plenty of money, and no one's going to hold a fundraiser or telethon for the cast. But here's, first of all, you know, we talk about the fact that several big stars, three stars, are getting $1 million an episode. It's Friends money. Well, it's Friends money if we were 10 years in the past. We're not, so it's actually about $750,000 in inflation-adjusted numbers. And you could argue that Big Bang Theory to CBS is just as, if not more valuable than Friends was to NBC, because we're in such a different world in TV. We have so few shows now, especially sitcoms, that can command huge audiences. Big Bang Theory gets over 20 million viewers to watch every single week. And a show like Modern Family, which is the number two comedy on TV, has maybe 12 million. So while Friends was also very big 10 years ago, Big Bang is just head and shoulders above everything else. So of course, these cast members were going to get huge raises. They are responsible for the biggest hit on TV by a mile.
Right. Not just on broadcast, but on cable. Let's not forget, Big Bang on TBS is frequently the highest rated show of the night in cable.
And we can talk about the raises, but they also got a chunk of the back end, which is a huge thing for an actor to get on a show. Obviously, the show will be in syndication forever, and they will get more money every time it reruns.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's just, to me, whenever you hear about these contract talks, it's not a matter of if there's going to be a deal, it's when. And as the hits get smaller, as more and more programming out there makes audiences scatter, it's going to be harder for actors to get these sort of big paydays. People might have thought that the Friends were going to be the last ones to get that, so maybe there'll be another show like Big Bang, but at the same time, it's scarcity. It's the same reason why broadcast networks still get so much money from advertisers every year, and they make a little bit more most years or get higher ad rates, because even though their numbers, their ratings are getting smaller, they're still the biggest game in town. Well, good for them for getting as much money as they could. They probably could have gotten even more.
Right, and this is why I could never get all that excited about the drama surrounding the cast contract negotiations, because we all knew how this was going to end. It was going to end peacefully and rather quickly, and that's exactly what happened. There was, you know, it was a little bit of a standoff. You know, they didn't show up to a table read, perhaps, but nothing really, really impacted production. The show is on schedule and on time, and will premiere in September, as we all expected. You remember back when Friends was trying to negotiate a final season, and there was a lot of drama surrounding whether or not they were going to get what they wanted. And back in the day, a couple other shows, you know, the ER renegotiations, you remember those. And there was some question at some point what was going to happen. So so good on them. Good on the Big Bang Theory cast members. Maggie, Friends versus Big Bang.
Friends forever.
Friends is forever.
Forever.
Well, Big Bang Theory has not gotten their Emmy yet. For outstanding comedy, much
I'm
to the
okay
chagrin of Warner Brothers TV. They've tried hard through the years, but they have not been able to get that Emmy win. They've gotten nominations, and of course some of the cast has won, including Jim Parsons, who's won for Outstanding Actor. But let's talk some Emmy thoughts and predictions for this year. So this year's Emmys are on August 25th on NBC. It's coming right before you know it, before the summer ends. I know Joe will be happy when these four-year consideration ads are done and we can stop talking about Emmys, right? Because, Joe, you're ready to talk about Golden Globes, I assume.
Of course.
Exactly. No, I don't mind the Emmys that much. It just saddens me when producers of and networks who produce great TV get so disappointed when they find out that, you know, the very mainstream, homogenous voting members of the Academy don't love their show, that somehow that means anything. It doesn't. They're still producing amazing TV that can be very profitable and successful, and whether it's the Big Bang Theory cast or whether it's the cast of The Americans. You know, neither of those shows got as many Emmy may not get as many Emmy wins as maybe the people involved would want, but they're both incredibly successful in their own way, and that's really what should count.
But there's been a lot of hand-wringing this year about the categories as well, and a lot of producers and showrunners have not been happy with the competition or where the other shows have ended up. Of course, we've talked a lot about the debate over True Detective versus Fargo. True Detective submitting itself in the drama category, Fargo submitting itself in the miniseries category. The Golden Globes is trying to resolve that issue by creating a new category. They've dumped the miniseries category, and instead they've created a new category called Limited Series. And this is actually interesting. So basically, any show with characters in a storyline confined to one season will be considered a limited series. So True Detective Detective will end up in there as well as Fargo. So perhaps that will resolve the debate, at least at the Golden Globes. But what do you guys think? Should the Emmys adopt a similar rule? Should they just sort of say one size fits all? Or should they continue to allow shows to submit themselves wherever they want to submit themselves?
That category has been tricky for so long, the miniseries movie category. You look at it and you think these things should not be competing against each other in most cases, in most years. And I look especially this year, obviously True Detective submitting as drama, but Fargo, I think, would win the category no matter what. And I know that sounds crazy and sounds insane and everyone loves their True Detective, but I'm worried that they might have screwed themselves out of a win that they may not even have had ever. I really look at it and I think it's Breaking Bad's to lose up top in the drama category. But I think combining it for Golden Globes is a very interesting take, and I'll be curious to see who comes out on top then.
Well, let's go around the horn now. So several key categories for the Emmys this year, and I want to get your take. So, Maggie, in drama series category, you mentioned Breaking Bad is...
I'm team Breaking Bad, yeah. And I loved True Detective as much as the next person. I really did, but come on, Breaking Bad, please.
I love Breaking Bad, too, and I think...
Please.
In a perfect world, it would win one more time. Why not? But I do think True Detective probably, or, you know, this could be the year that Game of Thrones finally picks it up.
They did get the most nominations, which is shocking, really.
And this has been the year where Game of Thrones really became the mainstream hit that everyone was talking about. And of course, right during voting season, how handy.
How handy.
So, you know, it really could be Game of Thrones to win this year. What do you think, Joe? We got Breaking Bad, Downton Abbey, Game of Thrones, House of Cards from Netflix, Mad Men, and True Detective.
I, of course, would vote for Mad Men, but that's because I came to that show late and just love everything it does, and therefore I'd give Mad Men every award, even if it's not quote-unquote as good as it used to be. But I'm actually with you, Mike. I smell a possible Game of Thrones upset if, in fact, True Detective and Breaking Bad somehow split the vote. Again, I never really understand how these things work, as I've made clear, so I don't really know. But I think Game of Thrones just had such an impactful season with so many huge moments. It's such a massive pop culture hit. You know, Breaking Bad is beloved, so that may yet carry it through if the voters want to just say, let's honor for history. But it's not like it hadn't won before. And True Detective, I mean, I think True Detective possibly has a chance, but I think True Detective could also just win something in the actor category for McConaughey, and everyone will be happy with it.
That one might be split because it's McConaughey versus Woody in the same category. Woody is in the lead drama actor category as well, and that kind of seems like maybe.
Yeah, I don't see that being split, though. I think it's all McConaughey.
It's all McConaughey,
This is McConaughey's world. We're all just all right in it.
Which is a shame because I actually think Woody Harrelson was just as good, in some ways even better than McConaughey. But I mean, they were both amazing, but I love Woody Harrelson's performance. Mm-hmm. Plus, come on, he was Woody from Cheers. He deserves some love.
Exactly. So comedy series, we got The Big Bang Theory, Louie, Modern Family, Orange is the New Black, Silicon Valley, and Veep. So guys, we can all agree this is the year that if they do give it to Modern Family again, we're gonna burn this place
we're
down.
We're gonna riot.
Right?
We're gonna riot.
We're tearing stuff down.
Yeah, it would be tying Frasier's record of 5 wins in a row, which would be insane. I keep looking at Veep thinking, you know, last year with Julia's win and with Tony's win and this year with even more nominations for the cast and the writing and obviously the show, I feel like it's Veep's to lose. And I feel like they're in for the upset.
I think history is going to be made and Orange is the New Black's going to pick it up. I think there are enough people who are going to say, you know, this is something different. This is, you know, a revolution. And Orange is the show that's going to be the first streaming series to ever win the series Emmy. And this is the year for Orange. What do you think, Joe?
Well, I think Modern Family is just going to win again. I think the voters are predictable. And you know what? Unlike you guys, I'm okay if it wins. I would love innovation. And yes, this again goes back to why I just don't put too much import in it. But I actually think Modern Family remains a great, inclusive, well-told comedy. Not every episode may be as fresh as it was 5 years ago when it was something brand new. But week after week, with twice as many episodes as these other shows, it turns out some amazing comedy. So I think Modern Family remains near the top of its game, and I think it still has a shot of winning.
I wonder if that helps the chances that it is a broadcast show, that it does have to crank out the 23 episodes every season. I wonder if they look at that and think, look, it's consistent over this stretch.
Well, it did not help The Good Wife. The Good Wife did not get nominated, even though they specifically sent out screeners explaining to the world, hey, we do 22 episodes a year. Look at every other show that only does 13.
That
could have actually bit them in the butt in the end. That could have backfired. But it's
how in the world does see? This is again why I just get so just fed up with. How do you not have a show like The Good Wife get a nomination? That just seems absolutely
ridiculous. That was one of the big snubs of the year.
And that is everyone's big thing, the example of there's just too much good TV on. Look at everything. We can't award everything. There's too much.
Or why the Emmys are, you know, a joke.
Oh, Joe. Always Joe. Back to the Emmys
wah,
is a joke.
Wah, wah, wah.
All right, now we're at that point in the show where we go around the room and we each download the story that is top of mind this month, story or show or whatever you're thinking about. So, Joe, why don't we start with you?
Well, I'm going to stick with the reality theme just a little bit. And as much as I absolutely am loving Married at First Sight and The Quest, I do want to give a shout out to an existing, one of the forefathers of our modern reality movement, and that would be Big Brother, which is now in its 16th installment and 15th year. And it's first in HD, by the way, which has made it much more enjoyable to watch because it doesn't look like it's being through a cheesecloth. Big Brother has made some twists in their format this year. And more importantly, they cast people who are really enjoyable and nice people. Last year, there were a bunch of racist and jerks and mean people as, you know, I think the show sort of decided to sort of play up the drama and try to cast people who were different. And the experience of watching the show last year became so bad that I had to bail out for the first time in 15 years. This year, they went with nice people. Interesting people. They're not the smartest people in the world, but they're nice people, and they're playing a relatively nice game, which isn't always exciting, but it's just exciting enough that I'm enjoying watching Big Brother like I haven't in many, many years. So, reality, Big Brother can still work.
I'm not shocked, Joe. You've been preaching Big Brother to me since the year 2000, I think. So, Maggie, what are you thinking about this month?
I am obsessed with John Oliver. I find that man so beyond fascinating. I think Last Week Tonight, going back to Emmys, you know, last year the big story was that Stephen Colbert finally ousted Jon Stewart from his throne as the Emmy champion for so many years. I really think they should enjoy that while they have it, because come next year when John Oliver is nominated for Last Week Tonight, he will win. Because that show is doing something that no other late night show is doing. It's actually teaching you something every single week. And I feel like we all kind of joked about the format when they first announced it. And oh, that breaking news every Sunday night. But he's managing to pull stories and take different angles that maybe you've heard throughout the week, but maybe didn't know what it was. This week was payday loans. I didn't know what that was until I sat and watched and I thought, this is insane. He gets me so incensed, and the entire audience is tweeting and using the hashtag and breaking websites and signing petitions. And I haven't seen that kind of passion around a late night show ever. And it's because of him. He's a phenomenal host.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't think I cared as much as I did about payday loans until I saw that spot. And now I'm going to go burn stuff down. I'm big on burning stuff down this month. I'm not sure why. Here's what I'm thinking about this month. Sort of in honor of the kiddies going back to school, let's talk about little kids TV. But this is a sophisticated animated series that I think, even if you don't have a kid, you know what? Even if you're all alone sitting at home flipping around, it is okay to turn to Disney XD. Because there's an animated show called Gravity Falls, which you haven't been watching, is not only one of the best animated kids shows around, but it's one of the best animated shows, period, on television right now. It's this mix of Twin Peaks and X-Files and Lost and the animated feature Monster House, all sort of wrapped up in a very funny bow. It's got the voices of Jason Ritter, Kristen Schaal, and Linda Cardellini, but the real genius behind it is a young animator named Alex Hirsch, who voices some of the main characters on the show. And this guy's a genius, and he's come up with this brilliant, brilliant cartoon, which I really urge you to watch, even if you don't have any kids. But if you do have kids, then you're really committing a crime if you're not exposing them to Gravity Falls. It's sort of the next generation of Phineas and Ferb, let's say. So, as always, thanks, Joe.
Thank you, Mike.
And thank you, Maggie.
Thanks, guys.
That was Joe Adalian, the West Coast editor of Vulture.com, and Maggie Furlong of Yahoo TV. You can follow Joe on Twitter at TVMojo and Maggie at Maggie Furlong. And I'm Michael Schneider, the executive editor of TV Guide Magazine. My Twitter handle is at Franklin Avenue. And that's it for this edition of The Spinoff. This podcast is produced by Caitlin Parker. Melissa Morton is our technical director. And special thanks to the good people at KUNV in Las Vegas. You can hear past episodes of The Spinoff on iTunes, Stitcher, and pretty much anywhere where you download podcasts. You can also hear it online at kcrw.com and on demand with the KCRW smartphone app. And until next time, this is The Spinoff, signing off.